There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
Right from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
You told me to start as quick as possible, and I did, and then I'm in trouble. Welcome to the last podcast on the left, everyone. I am Ben Kissel, as always, looking at the beautiful Marcus Parks.
Hello.
We have Henry Zebrowski with us. Henry, you were recognized as for being the star of Heroes Reborn.
Yeah,
while buying what?
Rubbers. I was buying condoms at the store, and a man turned to me. And he was like, "Oh shit, you Quentin, Heroes Reborn." I was like, "Yeah, man, yeah. I'm glad you watch the show." And he's like, "Man, you fucking?" And I was like, "Yep, yes.
Must
yes,
be.
I am.
That
yes, must
sir.
Be. Yes, yes, sir. Absolutely, yep. Ultra thin.
Stew? Is that stew? Buying condom?
You fucking?" I always keep the "you fucking." You know, I was like, "Yep, yes." Wickety-do.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, you know what puts a skip on my step? Ba-da-ding, ding, 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 ding. And we danced in a circle, arm in arm, back and forth. And then he robbed me.
Isn't that nice? The celebrity lifestyle you're living. You can't even buy condoms without being harassed in the line.
Speaking of fucking.
Ooh. Yeah, all right. So today's subject matter. I don't know if this is really, either way, sex is involved. I guess it's disgusting. Leonard Lake. And Charles NG. That's it.
NG, but pronounced ing.
This is where the white parts of us really show.
Yeah.
We're not really sure how to pronounce some of these ancient names, but I know it's Charles Ng. I know that they don't have, like a serial killer name, do they?
No, neither one of them do.
Which is very interesting because they're very particular. I think at one point they were called the video confession killers because, as you're going to see, Leonard Lake and Charles Ng are that. Well, they're not the sort of serial killer you're really used to. These guys documented everything.
And they did it the old-fashioned way on VHS tape, okay? They didn't have their iPhone. They could just upload it to iMovie to make a good smut film.
But we figured for the Christmas season, what better to bring in the holiday that makes all of us, particularly me, feel the darkest emotions that I'll feel all year. I hate the holiday.
Mm-hmm.
December is a shitty month. It's full of tension. Everybody just wants you to fucking buy. We've had 3 shooters this week, and you know what? I'm not feeling that particularly jolly, so I don't want any of you to feel that way either.
All right, well, let's not mention the shooters anymore. It's an evergreen show.
All right, what are you talking about? The shooters are here to stay.
Well, yeah, that's true. Actually, as a matter of fact, someone can listen to this 5 years from now and be like, there was 3 shooters this week. That's a good point, Henry. Let's start it off.
These guys, Leonard Lake and Charles Ng, they were partners in crime in at least 11 and at the most 25 murders over the span of just over a year from 1982 to 1983 in the San Francisco area. Now, Lake and Ng killed men, women, children, even 2 entire families, but they were focused mainly on imprisoning, torturing, and killing young women in the pursuit of creating what Leonard Lake named his M-Lady.
Yeah, the Operation Miranda, he liked to call it, after his favorite book, The Collector, by John Foles,
I believe it was called. I thought it was after my favorite Sex in the City character. She really butchered that name.
That's the thing, is that some of those Mirandas were actually closer to a Charlotte.
Yeah, that's
but,
true.
But they became Mirandas. This is a horrible story. This is like Marcus and I are both talking about it. Dog Meat and I both had to take several showers while researching this. This is highly despicable. They killed babies. Charles Ng drew cartoons depicting the things they did to babies, whether they were satire or not. I mean, they were...
Satire.
They were funny looking cartoons. They were funnily drawn.
Satire is, you know, sort of defined by it not actually happening in real life.
He drew. There was one where literally he drew himself with a chef hat on it, and he had a chef hat on in it, and he was stereotypically Asian, and he was chopping up a baby, and he was literally going ding dong, killed a baby, cooked a baby.
And again, we will not say that's stereotypically Asian.
No,
that is stereotypically serial killer.
No, I mean he drew himself in a fashion.
I see.
He was racist against himself. I'm not racist.
Good. Really, as we'll find with Charles Ng, one of the most stereotypically Asian people that has ever existed.
Very
he
smart.
Is, he's a difficult man.
Yeah.
But these guys were real Bo Jacksons of the killer world.
Jack of all trades.
These
huh?
guys who I could really compare them to the most is the Toy Box Killer. This is the worst, most disturbing episode. As far as things that we have, journals, videos from these guys, this is the most disturbing recurring thing that we're going to cover since the Toy Box Killer. And guess what? We're going to cover it a lot. And we're going to start right up top with Leonard Lake, a bit of a video blogger.
Yes.
Loved to record his own conversations.
Loved the sound of his own voice.
Loved the sound of his own voice.
Sort of a Nixon meets the wedding tape killer.
Yes.
But this guy, he started everything off with what was eventually called the philosophy tape. And in this, he set out exactly how he was going to pull off Operation Miranda. Let's listen
to this to fucking tape. Piece of shit.
I believe that I can, if I can construct a holding cell, I can create a facility that is so stark and so empty that fairly quickly, by a combination of painful punishments when I'm displeased, I can quickly condition a young woman to cooperate with me fully. It may not work. However, I want to try.
And what you're going to find out is that what these two men go on to construct is a gigantic Byzantine underground bunker, not unlike H.H. Holmes, that becomes their playground for sadistic sexual play for up to 25, possibly women, men, and children.
Yeah. And these guys, when I've, you know, as I'm researching, of course, when you research these things, it's the only thing that we can talk about to people. And when
which just makes us great. I mean, Christmas time. And I was also researching it while doing Thanksgiving. We're like sitting Marcus and I are literally at Thanksgiving together, like, I just see Marcus vigorously carving the turkey.
Yeah, getting
and
too I'm, into it, Marcus.
Yeah, I'm going over there being like, oh, looking like a real M lady over there, you know. And then we have a hearty laugh, and then about
laugh.
30 seconds of chilled silence.
Yeah, no, don't have children anytime soon, guys.
But these guys, Leonard Lake and Charles Ng, when I tell people, yeah, we're working on these like most brutal, one of the most amazing true crime stories that I've ever researched, people don't know about him, just right. Like people didn't know about the Toy Box Killer. It's because I think it's too much.
It's quite a bit.
It's quite a bit. It's just that the brutality of these guys, it's too much to handle.
It's like Kid A, the album Kid A.
Right, great album. You know, this is just...
But these guys are a special brand of pieces of shit. They are control freaks, hyper nerds, military nerds, which I think in the end, which we're going to see are the worst kind. We're going to see that it's military nerds. I think eventually you turn into a terrorist like Timothy McVeigh. It's kind of that same mentality. And these guys just love to put it in the bush in a way that was criminal.
That's a good point. And I do want to point out Dog Meat actually woofed. Which was kind of exciting.
Woof.
You gave a woof. I can't get the image out of my head of him pushing play on the VHS recorder and then having to run in front of the camera deliver it. And like, oh!
There is some of that in the tapes.
I see.
Yeah. Well, while these guys are both very fascinating, let's start with Leonard Lake. Now, Leonard was born to Gloria and Elgin Lake on October 29th, 1945 in San Francisco, California. He'd be followed by his sister, Sylvia, and a brother, Donald. A little after Donald came, though, Leonard's father, a notorious alcoholic, hightailed it up to Seattle to escape his presumably miserable life.
And you know, there is a special bus line for drunk dads that you can take from San Francisco to Seattle called the Dribble.
Oh,
you can take
that
Dribble bus all the way down, and it's just a bunch of drunk dads just hanging out, just swigging out a flask, having the best time in their lives, just listening to nothing but Def Leppard. Like, and they drive that bus at twice the speed limit just in case they crash and it'll kill all of them instantly.
Right. It's like a Greyhound, but the toilet's always full.
Yes, and they want it to go.
Isn't that
they
nice?
Want it to flip.
Take the Dribble. When you're a sad dad.
Well, Gloria did follow Elgin up to Seattle a couple of months later to try to save the marriage, but little Leonard would be left at home with the grandparents, never to live with either of his parents ever again, despite his mother and siblings returning to San Francisco within the year. Leonard stayed with his grandparents until he came of age.
Now, this is what happens while he's staying with his grandparents is fairly rough. We're going to see early on that Leonard Lake, you know, like mostly when couples like split up and they do the thing where they're like, they tell their children, this is not your fault. This is mommy and daddy still love you. We just needed to leave. I'm pretty certain that all of this was Leonard Lake's fault. Leonard Lake started off as a child highly sexually active. They said that he was a child, like, and that's actually not unnormal. A lot of kids wake up, like, kind of have a weird preternatural sexual fascination, but then it either mellows out or they become like Larry Flint. You know what I mean? Sure. You become constructive with it.
Make some money.
Or a Jeffrey Dahmer. Or a Leonard Lake. And so he he was sexually fascinated with his own sister. But the thing is, his grandmother was raised them in a very particular way, where she wanted them to understand the beauty of the human body. And a part of what she did, I don't know how much of it's true or not, but this is from what I read from various sources like Murderpedia and a couple other places, that she basically made him take nude pictures of his sisters in order to help him get an artistic appreciation of the naked human form, and eventually began to develop a sexual obsession with his youngest sister, Sylvia. And eventually, their older brother, Donald, became this very aggressive member of the household and used to beat on all of them. And what Leonard used to do was say to his sister, I'll protect you from Donald if you start to do this thing to me I like to call a blowjob.
All right.
So he did that with his sister a lot, so that's entertaining, huh?
Interesting tale, Henry. Interesting tale indeed.
Leonard also had a problem with animals. His cousin Chester Richardson used to visit Lake when they were about 8 or 9 years old. Chester said that Lester had a thing for mice. He had pet mice, started off with just a few, but as Chester told it, they reproduced in the thousands. But Chester's testimony might be a little suspect. He seemed to be a bit of an exaggerator. This is what he had to say about Leonard's mice.
He had a little city for him. It's a regular little mouse world. There were tunnels and castles and mazes and even a little train for them to ride on.
That is kind of cute, a mouse conductor. That is kind of adorable. But that doesn't seem to be too malicious at this point. This is kind of a creative thing for a kid to do.
It seems like someone who enjoys early games of being God to a group of tiny things you can own and command, then yes, it's very constructive.
So you just described the job of a city planner, which is all that he really was. But
I would
mouse,
be very concerned if I heard from the mouth of a city planner, y'all just my mice going through my mazes and my tunnels till I'm done with you.
I guarantee you they talk exactly like that. I actually promise that.
Well, I mean, as far as him having a little mouse world, that's not so bad. No. But when it came time to get rid of him, Chester said that Leonard sold some, gave away a few others.
Businessman. Yeah. Charity
but
work.
For the most part, killed them and dissolved their bodies in acid using his beginner chemistry set. Much like Jeffrey Dahmer.
But he said that when this is also true, this is a quote from his cousin. He said that what he would do is he would put them in a little jar of acid and they would slowly turn into a green little goo.
An ugly green goo.
Yeah. Ugly green goo.
Not a beautiful forest green.
Yeah. Kind of reminds, it's like Ratatouille. But fucking when he turns into slime.
Right. Yeah, I think that'll be in the sequel.
Well, as Henry said earlier, Leonard always had a problem with his brother Donald. See, Donald had been hit in the head by a train when he was 9.
Yeah, I read that. Now, are we talking a human train? A train that carries humans or a small train?
I gotta say, I mean, technically, his head's way stronger than most.
Right? Because if he got hit by an actual train, this good on him.
Yeah, it's an old-timey injury.
Well, yeah. That, of course, caused brain damage, which caused Donald to be, in the words of his sister, quote, a little slow, and also made him quite violent.
That's the kicker. That's the kicker right there.
It also made him dependent on his mother. And this informed Leonard's opinion that he held from a very early age that people who were dependent on the government were lazy or incompetent. He said that he would poison the water supply of everyone on welfare if he could.
Now, what we're seeing here is a very intense conservative, like military-like streak that literally started from when he was a boy. He, like, we're gonna hit, what you're gonna say right here is that he basically became a really it's a piece of shit early and an insufferable teenager.
Oh yeah,
one of the worst sort of. I hate it when kids are conservative. Nothing is worse than seeing like a child Republican because that means like there's no place to go
right
from there. Like you have to start warm-hearted and slowly the world should make you cold and broken. That's the goal of life.
Of course. Yeah, definitely.
But not when you're young. You shouldn't start like that.
No, you shouldn't start railing against welfare queens when you're 10.
No. I mean, the only thing you can do when you're 20 is to make a murder basement. That's the only place you can go.
Yeah, that's eventually. If you start cold at 10 by, I think he was about 35 when the murder basement came.
Yeah.
So, start high and then slowly go back down. But, Leonard did grow up to be an insufferable teenager, not just because of the conservative views, but he was also one of those kids that said, like, oh, I worship ancient Norse gods.
Mm.
And then he said, like, well, actually, I'm a Buddhist. And then finally he settled on atheism, saying that he didn't place any faith in, quote, holy Joes.
Yeah. But that's sort of normal. I went through I went through the Wicca phase, and then I went through my wearing the Texas Chainsaw Massacre shirt for 2 years phase, and then, I'm back at both of them.
Yeah.
So it's weird, but now I choose it, and in a fun way.
Yeah, but it is, what you really get with Leonard Lake is that when I read about Leonard Lake, I really can't help but think about the internet. Because his entire persona is kind of that, what has now become the cliche neckbeard persona.
Yes, he's a neckbeard. Yeah, that's exactly the way to put it. He gives us one star on iTunes.
Yeah.
This is this guy. It's this guy's and like people like my mom who are like, it's the part of humor that I don't like one star.
That's right. Do you think the internet would have saved him?
I have actually been thinking about that quite a bit. If he would have had something on the internet's other guys to say like, of course, women are all bitches. They're there for you. They're there to be your slave. Maybe he wouldn't have done this.
Yeah.
But...
like a real men's rights guy. Well, yeah. My question is with him is that to be honest, when I think of Leonard Lake, I think of the cannibal cop guy. What I think is that what he would have used the internet for, what we're going to get into with Leonard Lake, is this is a man that was all about sexual fantasy for forever. Deep, dark, sexual obsession with every time. And the one thing that the internet can do is I think porn is really good in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I think it's good to masturbate. I think it's one of the things you got to do. It helps a lot of people. I think it saves a lot of people from rape. I think it quells a lot of rape fantasies. If you could jerk it out and get it out of your system. This is the type of guy that I think that sort of sexual obsession and the way you can go down a deep, dark sex hole on the internet would have made him even worse.
That's a great documentary. I think it's called Thought Crimes on Valet, Officer Valet, all about the cannibal
it's
cop.
It's really
but
good.
The other side of the internet argument is that it normalizes such fantasies as well. So he could also get sort of caught up 5-10 years later. He has it so ingrained in his mind that this is just common thought that he goes and acts it out without knowing the ramifications of his actions.
It could be, but it also could be that, he has this fantasy about a Miranda woman, this sort of like trapped slave. And then he goes on kink.com and sees that exact same thing, jerks it out, and he's fine.
Subscribes to a webcam service doing that kind of thing and get a private message, do all that shit.
Goes to the UK and pays $500 and has the experience actually acted out for him, which is something that they do at the kink.com facilities. There's a great documentary on it. I forget the name.
It's just called Kink. It's great. Okay.
All while he's the manager of Best Buy.
Boom.
Yes, exactly. Lake, as a teenager, speaking of fantasy, he was also obsessed, and this was a lifelong obsession, with a novel called The Collector. Now, the story of The Collector goes that a lonely butterfly collector becomes fixated on a young woman named Miranda. He kidnaps her and forces her to stay in a prison of his own making. Here's an excerpt from The Collector.
It was like not having a net and catching a specimen you wanted in your first and second fingers. I was always very clever at that. Coming up slowly behind and you had it. But you had to nip the thorax, and it would be quivering there. It wasn't easy like it was with the killing bottle, and it was twice as difficult with her. because I didn't want to kill her. That was the last thing I wanted.
But this is a very common, almost a fairy tale type trope. Rapunzel, stuck away in the castle, yeah. Or even Shrek is about something similar.
Well, that's about rescue. That's about
Lake
rescuing.
Is Shrek.
No, the detectives are Shrek. Leonard Lake is whatever the name of the terrible prince is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Leonard Lake, is the guy that keeps them. That keeps him in captivity.
But it's also there's the opposite too. This is where Leonard Lake is a lot like BTK, where he romanticizes the whole thing and his position in it. It's a part of that is viewing yourself as a sympathetic evil king, where you're like you want to keep somebody and use them exactly how you want them to, and to him. When you'll see later on, when we go through the rules, once Operation Miranda is in full force, he begins to believe, eventually they'll love being my captive.
Yeah, exactly. And
sort of a Stockholm Syndrome thing.
Yeah, and Leonard Lake is one of the reasons why I consider Leonard Lake so fascinating is because since we have so many documents written by him, since we have so much video evidence of him actually talking about these crimes very candidly, we can really see the evolution of this guy.
Yes.
We can see how these things actually, how he
went from fantasy to reality.
Yeah, and why he went from fantasy to reality, what that actually came. And what I kind of think is that we'll definitely get into this more probably in part two or part three, is that it's kind of a midlife crisis.
Yes, because that's what you're going to see later on. We'll go into this, but once he hits 35, he's like, I'm dumpy, I'm bald. He says all this stuff. He's like, my body's bad. There's a type of woman I want to have sex with that will not look at me, and so I need to find a way to make sure I can get that from them because I deserve it because I've come this far, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. He's a piece of shit.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, he's like the extreme version of the internet nice guy. Like, why won't they? I'm a nice guy. Why do they always go with the assholes? And Leonard Lake is the absolute extreme version of that.
Right. I mean, if he didn't invest so much damn money in this murder basement, he could have bought a Corvette and trolled the town. I'm sure some young gal would have loved
you
it.
You just do that shit.
That's what
just
you do.
Just do that shit. You don't need to keep a prisoner. I'll say anyway right now. If you have prisoners,
let him go.
Let him go.
Get him out of there.
Come on. You don't want it. It's too much of a hassle.
Yes.
You know it is, okay? When it comes down to it, you know how hard it is to keep the prisoners. Just let him go.
But
you know what you should do is go ahead, buy a Corvette.
Get a Corvette. Or whatever the coolest car is nowadays.
So Leonard Legg, of course, he's... It does take until his mid-30s to actually enact the Operation Miranda. But the man that he enacts it with is a man 15 years his junior, a one Mr. Charles Ng.
And his middle name's Cheetah.
Yeah, which is so cool.
His name is actually Charles Cheetah Ng.
Which is very funny because he's very chubby. And he doesn't seem like he'd move all that fast.
Well, he became chubby later as he got into prison. Because they all get chubby in prison. But he was kind of spry when he was a younger fella.
When he was a rapist, you mean?
Yep.
Absolutely.
So Charles Cheetah Ng.
Charles Cheetah Ng. Leonard Lake's partner in crime. He was born on Christmas Eve, 1960, in Hong Kong, to Kenneth and Oi Ping Ng. He was the youngest of three, and although middle class, the family of five lived in a two-bedroom apartment with two grandmothers and two aunts.
Which is, they had a very big family support system in China. That's kind of that's how they live. It's cultural. His father was like a driving, demanding man. Again, kind of cultural. He's a real tiger dad, which means that he beat the fuck out of him, like a bunch. Yeah. But he really just wanted, if you listen to the stories afterwards, like of the experts of his father, because the truth is that he had a lot of hope for Charlie, and he put a lot of work into Charlie and was like, I'm going to do the best for you and pay for all these private schools. But then when it didn't work out, he was like, he started flipping out, started beating him. But later on, his father was like, hey, maybe I should not be beating so much.
Yeah. Maybe not. Well, this whole thing could have been avoided if the Chinese would have put in their one-child policy way earlier.
This is Hong Kong.
This is Hong Kong.
So it's a British territory.
Different. Very good.
So Ng is different from Lake in that as a child, he actually loved animals and went to great lengths to care for them. Case in point was his pet chicken. Now, Charles had raised his pet chicken.
It's very dangerous to raise a chicken in Hong Kong and consider it a pet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, it did not work out. And so the chicken met its end in a cooking pot. And we don't know, by the way, if Charles was informed of him eating his pet chicken before or after dinner.
You know, this is it's straight out of South Park. It's what Cartman did when he fed the man's parents in the
Scott Tinnerman's parents too. Yes, yeah, in
it's
front of a Radiohead.
I want to say this. I was very good with chickens as a child. The Swenson farm had a missing chicken. And what detective did they call? Some stupid one. And then I went in there and I got the chicken out.
What are you talking about?
Swenson's lost a chicken.
No, Swenson's is a grocery store.
That's the name of a family. That is the name of a family.
Oh,
they lost
family.
A chicken.
Oh, okay.
They sent in somebody to get the chicken. The chicken did not go to that person.
Where did the chicken go?
It was up in the coop. And I went in.
But is that where the chicken's supposed to be?
Yes. No, but they wanted it to probably kill it.
So you... Okay.
Well, now that I think about it, actually...
Yeah, you were the grim reaper of this chicken.
Well, yeah.
You went out, earned this chicken's trust, somehow as a giant boy.
Yeah.
You went out and, like, did you flap your arms and buckle down like you were a giant chicken?
Very theatrical. I did what I had to do.
Now, was this at the time when you were also told by the principal you were hugging people too much?
No, that was years later. Yeah. So, anyway, I just
and a little look into the life of Ben Kissel.
I got the chicken down. The chicken and I were very
another
close.
Day in long fat man history.
Mm-hmm. Concerning other pets, Oi Ping said,
"Well, that's the problem. Since he kept getting these delicious pets,
yeah.
So he got a turtle, and so the mother said, when he's walking around with his turtle on a leash, and then Rita, he had a turtle." And he would not recognize Rocket up, so the turtle was all over the place in the house. So every day, he's buying fish to feed his turtles. And then, what are you going to do? The turtle's getting bigger. And I'm like, turtle soup. And so I just get the craving for it. So what do? Chippity chop with my chopper knife. Mm-hmm. And no turtle no more. Charlie come in, and he's like, oh, where my turtle go? I say, you eat soup for 3 days. You eat soup for 3 days. That's where turtle go. And right. Charlie go, oh, boo-hoo.
Yeah, he was very sad. I didn't know that turtles ate fish.
Yeah. Oh,
who knew,
of course, yeah. And then, of course, there was the dog, to which Oi Ping said,
It's very smeary. It's very smeary. So we wanted to bring it to Japan with the turtle, the far away to Chari, and I'd have the Chari reach the turtle out to the pond, and then there was a dog. I'm afraid of dog. So he will reach it where there are some other dog, so the dog can have some companion. And the whole time, I'm like, Chari, why you boohoo? And Chari boohoo say he gonna rock up woman, and make her do the rape for many months. And I'm Charlie Burr.
Seems to me like Charlie's mother is the future serial killer. She's just killing all the poor boys' pets.
And, you know, each pet that was lost just devastated little Charlie. Just
yes.
devastated.
The thing is that
he
was such a little bitch. You're going to see this later on, too, when the trial goes south and he's sentenced to death.
Yeah.
You see this pout come on his face where he's just like, fucking court, always wrong. Where he's like, literally, like, that's what he, literally, I'm not being racist.
No.
Barely it's, being racist.
Yeah. No, that is actually exactly what he sounded like.
Yeah, and so this little kid, like, these were temper tantrums.
Yeah.
When she took these pets away, it's because you're living in a goddamn house with your two aunts and your grandparents instead. The last thing you want is a turtle and a dog shitting all over the place. I understand why she turned them into soup.
No, I'm on Charlie's side on this one. Have you ever heard of a parent killing your favorite animal and then feeding it to you three times?
This is China. There's very little food going around. He's bringing food in the house that he's given names. You're just bringing food to the house.
I don't even know which side you guys are on anymore.
I am so pro not feeding your child their pet.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
I mean, I'm just saying there's a difference between a pet and an amateur farm. You know what I mean? That's what he's turning the house
into. I don't know.
Of course, these temper tantrums turned into behavioral problems. Charles started getting into trouble again and again, particularly liked hurling Molotov cocktails off of roofs, loved bullying little British children, Hong Kong being a British territory, but what he was into most of all was theft. He would steal anything, and his thieving ways would land him in jail again and again throughout the years, and eventually... this would result in both his and Leonard Lake's downfall way down the line.
And I'm trying, he was real sneaky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? He was super sneaky.
He seemed to get caught all the time.
No, he was a bad thief.
Right.
You know, it's very interesting with people that are like, they become career thieves. So the reason why they become known as career thieves is because they keep getting caught.
Right. Yeah. Career thieves never get caught. The best ones you never hear about.
Yeah. Which is interesting. How many career thieves are out there? If you're a career thief, listen, all right, I'm going to do total impunity. All right, we won't ask your name.
Yeah.
Use a burner email. Mm-hmm. Please email us if you steal for a living. I want to hear how you do it.
Henry, just do me a favor. Check your pockets. Is your wallet still there?
Benjamin!
Yes.
Another day in long fat man history.
So Ng, as a kid, bounced from private school to private school because of, you know, the thievery and the arson and the like. That eventually landed him in San Francisco in 1979. And by October of that year, Charles had faked his birth certificate and joined the U.S. Marines.
That is the thing that would bring him and Leonard Lake together was mm-hmm. Semper Fi, that a whole idea of Marines bonding together because Leonard Lake also joined the Marines. Because from a young age, Charles Ng was convinced that the army was going to be like the perfect fit for him because he had violent tendencies. Mm-hmm. He loved guns. He was obsessed with everything about like the uniform. He thought it was going to give him some legitimacy. And little did he know he had a brother in Leonard Lake, mm-hmm. technically a father figure in Leonard Lake.
Yeah, he really did. And Leonard Lake, mm-hmm. he joined the Marines at a pretty bad time, January 1964.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was just a few months before Gulf of Tonkin and just a few months before the United States would go full on into the Vietnam War.
Right.
So military life immediately appealed to Leonard Lake. Of course, he loved the guns. He loved the quote-unquote survival skills that he learned in the Marines. But what he really enjoyed was the affectations of military
life. Well, that's what all these guys do. They like the feeling that being in the military give him, these types that join the Marines.
No. We have a ton of listeners in the armed forces out there. But these guys, people in the armed forces, you know the guy we're talking about here.
Yeah, it's the piece of shit that's there just because he gets a helmet and a gun.
Yeah. And loves camouflage. That Leonard Lake was one of those camo guys that only shops at Army Surplus. Plus, wears camouflage all the time, lots of berets. He loved the language of the military. He always referred to all of his actions, no matter how mundane or sinister, he always called them operations or ops for short.
God, operation, go get me some toilet paper because I just shat and I ran out of paper towels.
Yeah, you just poo-pooed yourself in the middle of a mess hall. That's not an operation. Just
operation Brownie Pockets is in effect.
Yeah, is that what you're going to call that? You just shat yourself, you drunk bastard.
And of course, there was the promise of violence. Leonard, later on, he would tell people that he loved his time in Vietnam. He didn't even want to leave. They made him leave. That he, quote-unquote, killed a lot of people. And that the hardest thing he had to do was, quote-unquote, zip up a body bag.
But he was totally full of shit.
He was lying.
Because he worked, what was he? He's a radar technician.
He was a radar technician. And that's another thing that that vets say a lot, is that the guys that talk about combat never saw any.
Right, so they're trying to just sort of, trump up their own egos, huh?
They're trying to trump up their own egos. They're trying to seem impressive to people, or they're trying to intimidate people. It's like, yeah, I killed some motherfuckers. The people who actually kill people don't fucking talk about it.
No, they're haunted by it. My uncle killed people. He can't even talk about Vietnam. He can't even go to Chinatown.
Right.
So that's true, right?
I mean, that is true, but not talking about it. I've never seen him in Chinatown. But I imagine if he went to Chinatown, he wouldn't be good there.
Yeah, might trigger some PTSD, huh?
Yeah, you could say that for inherent racism.
So this guy was like, I love the smell of napalm in the morning. And then he would just like look down and be like, oh, that's an omelet. Never mind. So he never saw any battle at all.
Didn't see a single minute of combat. Spent all of his time on a base in Da Nang. Maybe he might have heard some gunfire, might have heard some bombs here and there, but he never once went out into the... He was never in country.
He did love the whorehouses of Vietnam, and that's actually very true. That's what he did. What you're going to see again, he got training for it.
Yeah, he went into Da Nang, got some horrors, and came on back, worked on some radar. But really, the Marines, to their credit, this was the only time in Leonard Lake's life that anybody would see that maybe there's something a little fucked up about this guy.
And that's the Marines.
Right.
The Marines say to
a guy... In 1965.
Literally, they were like, we can't put a gun in your hands. Meanwhile, they just faked a terrorist act to start a war in Vietnam.
I mean, yeah, Vietnam, they were like, you are far too sane for this gun. Go back, have a pint of whiskey, come back, we will arm you.
Yeah, exactly.
Vietnam was crazy.
Yeah, Vietnam was crazy, and Leonard Lake was too crazy for Vietnam.
Yeah, so they didn't give him any sort of, they let him go nowhere near the field, he didn't get a gun, and he was diagnosed as a schizophrenic, basically impending schizophrenia.
Yeah.
They were like, basically, he was like, well, it's like, he is one egg short of a dozen. He's like, that's like what his fucking terminology was, and they kicked him off the fucking Marines. They gave him an honorable discharge.
Mm-hmm. And he was put in a hospital psych ward for a couple of months, and his first wife, Karen Lee Minersman, who he married between his first and second tours of duty, later told of a strange incident involving him soon after his diagnosis. One night, Lake broke into a storage facility to steal quote-unquote government equipment. Karen doesn't remember exactly what it was, but either way, he didn't find what he's looking for and blamed his failure on, quote, an attack of diarrhea.
Operation Brownie Pockets is in full effect. Retreat. Retreat.
I can't believe they've come back again.
His solution to this was to lay in bed for days at a time eating nothing but chocolate.
Ack, I know how that feels. You right, Kathy? Mondays. Mm.
His reasoning was that chocolate caused constipation, so as soon as he was suitably plugged up, he could resume his op and complete his mission. But as far as we know, he never did.
I would I would resume Operation Brownie Pockets, but I got to tell you what, I love shitting.
Yeah. Sounds like he likes chocolate more.
So no, Operation Fondue Tube is in full effect. Let's go.
Oh, my goodness.
But the rest of Karen's marriage to Leonard wouldn't be so whimsical.
That was the good part of it? That was the one 4 days in bed slamming chocolate so he would stop shitting himself?
So he could steal things from the government.
Oh, we had some good times, honey. But man, mostly it's been pretty rough.
Yeah.
So she described their first few months of marriage as quote-unquote sort of average. And their time.
That's how I always like to describe all my romances.
Yeah.
Especially the honeymoon phase, sort of average. And she described their time after he was officially discharged as, quote unquote, fairly normal. But things went downhill fairly quickly after that. As we know from Leonard's philosophy tape that we heard from at the very beginning of the show, and what we know about psychopaths in general, Lake's relationships always started off with him playing the sweetheart.
Because he wants to appear to you as a person that you want him to be.
Yeah.
Like he wants to be the perfect man because a part of it is the sadistic pleasure he gets out of making the switch. Or he does not understand why you won't jump with him to the switch. Because he was a very, as we're going to see, kinky man. Mm-hmm. And not in a way that was remotely normal. It's because it was just, as soon as you gave him in, she would take a mile. His sexual predilections were unquenchable.
Did he have that much forethought, though? Or was he just, you know, in order to get people's attention or to get someone to love you, you have to do what you have to do. Did he want to be a good person?
No.
He
Absolutely
knew that he was
not.
Like, every time that he would do something kind, he was just like, just wait, this is all bullshit.
Well, it's because he just felt he was above everybody. Right. So he feels like he has to condescend and talk down to the people that are below him in order to mesmerize them. And then it's like, what you're going to see, what he says before about the term off-the-shelf lover, which is like how slaves were off-the-shelf employees, where it's like, that's like what that's what he wanted. So in the end, he would take these women and mold them into a way that he wanted, and he thought that they would go along with him because he was so superior and he had this spell over them, and like most of the time they're like, no.
Yeah. And when it didn't work, it always came back to like, fucking bitches, man. It's like these, like when women wouldn't acquiesce to his will, it was never his fault. It was never what he was doing. It was always, everything was always done to him.
Yes.
Right, right, right.
And then, but he did have some hold with his first wife. He pressured her into becoming a prostitute for him, where that was his idea, was to push it, being like, he started taking nude pictures of her and started going out and basically selling her body a little bit for her to make some cash. And that's how he did it. And he got sexual pleasure out of her being shared by many men.
And people always talked about Leonard Lake as being an extremely charming man, or at least the women who fell into his trap. He was either described as extremely charming or an absolute piece of shit.
Mm.
Like a lot of people did kind of see him. It's like, there's something really wrong with this
guy. But this is where we'll see the stripe of H.H. Holmes.
Yeah.
where he is that, where he believed he was larger than life.
Yeah, and Leonard Lake's biggest kink by far, the thing that got him off the absolute most, something that started in childhood, taking nude photographs. Over the years, Leonard Lake would accumulate dozens upon dozens of albums of nude pictures he'd take of both women and young girls. And it wasn't just pictures that he was married to or dating either. He convinced countless women to pose for him over the years. And oh, how he loved to show those pictures to anyone who would look. Anybody yeah. who entered into Leonard Lake's home would be forced to look at his collection of nude photographs.
Well, once
you
got to know him a little bit and you were like a dude or something, you'd start looking at the pictures. And if you were dating him, he'd show you the pictures because there was something about him that he thought that it would sexually excite these women.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't.
No, believe it or not, they don't like to feel extremely jealous.
No, exactly not. And he, you know, showed him to his wife, Karen, all the time that he was taking pictures of other women while he was married to Karen, and his douchiness in that marriage extended far beyond the sexual realm. He claimed to hate telephones and only got her a telephone after concocting a completely fake identity to give to the phone company.
What a douchebag. It's just this thing where it's the guys that were like, I don't shop online because the government's going to take my credit card. And you're like, yeah. Man, they got all our shit already.
Yeah.
Shut up. Just fucking get over it.
He pestered her constantly about taking part in three ways, which she only did once and did not enjoy. She supported him completely by dancing at a local strip club while he gardened all day long, and he just would not shut the fuck up about the collector.
I don't know.
I mean, up to this point, to be honest, though, taking nude pictures, everyone on their cell phones right now have tons of nude pictures, you know, and then the killing of the mice, that's not that extreme. I mean, I want to see when he really jumps the shark, because at this point, he's not quite as bad as, you know, someone like a Ramirez already at this point, or, I mean, there's a lot of crazier people who we've covered up to this point, I think.
Well,
I mean,
he makes up
have a
for
three,
it later.
What guy, I mean, I don't particularly have a three-way fantasy, but many guys have a three-way fantasy.
It's the way that, it's, as far as the, like, yeah, some people, like, okay, let's say, like, when I was a kid, I used to kill frogs, you know, so, but that's not quite as bad as killing dozens of mice and dissolving their bodies while giggling. Yeah, I've gotten
put fireworks up their buttholes and laughed your ass off.
But technically, that was Texas games.
And
that's
also
the only thing they could do is kids.
And also, they were reptiles. They're further away from us.
Then mice?
Makes no sense.
Oh, you're
no,
right.
That I will say makes no sense. That is a weird Texas validation.
No, that totally makes sense because mice are mammals. They're closer to us.
Leonard Lake's Leonard Lake's entire life was devoted to sex.
Yeah, and it
that's the right. problem is that it's once she gets to a point, and it was past like working at a job. It was past like the collector became everything on his mind. That's
right.
Where it became the unhealthy and became bigger than just some guy who's into three ways.
Right.
Is that it was the only thing he was concerned
with. Yeah, I'm just saying, I'm interested to hear really how he goes to the next level of true horror.
Right. And as far as the nude photographs go, imagine if you got a bunch of, like, say, nude selfies from a bunch of different ladies, and you insisted on showing the nude selfies that you have on your phone to every acquaintance that you talk to every time you saw them.
It would be awkward and uncomfortable, right? But I'm not saying that then I would immediately jump to murder basement.
But
right,
also, right. He had physically forced his girlfriend, wife, to work at a strip club and become a prostitute. Like,
yeah.
This is what he's doing. He became like an amateur pimp. You became his own version of the collector in a small way in the house as like a sort of lead up.
And he was also super abusive. He would administer what he called controlled beatings that he would start hitting her.
Well,
with
now we're getting there. Okay.
Yeah. He started hitting her with an open hand.
He's got heart.
I just spoke too soon. I'm sorry.
Then he started with an open hand and then slowly worked his way up to a fist. She endured the marriage for 2 years before finally leaving him in 1972. His last petty act would be to break into her new apartment and burn holes in all of her clothes with acid. And Leonard's sister, Janet, said that the divorce was the last time she ever saw Leonard cry. And along with the kind of, sort of, not that bad abandonment of his mother as a child, was the source of Lake's hatred of women.
Which is also a very common psychopathic trait where he just pins it all on this one woman that betrayed him, even though he was beating the fuck out of her. Mm-hmm. And then his mom, who left because she couldn't handle his drunk father and the fact that she literally was staring into the eyes of a young psychopath.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, the burning of the holes in the clothes with acid is very specific, but people cut up their ex-significant other's clothes all the time, leave them on the front lawn, things like that. I mean, the controlled beatings now we're getting, I understand. He's not a good person.
Yeah, term controlled
beatings.
It's
just very bizarre. Yeah, yeah.
It is very bizarre. And I do agree that this is a pretty normal, I guess, I would say at this point he's average psychopath.
But also, we are forgetting during this time his obsession with the oncoming nuclear holocaust that was going to end all life on Earth.
And that's what we're getting to right now.
That is a thing that he had carried since the Marines. Yeah. When he was going through the Marines, he started this diatribe early on about how, like, this is just the fucking beginning. These communists are going to take this up to the fucking midnight of the nuclear clock. It's like, this is it. We got to prepare for the end times. And everyone's been being like, Lenny, you're being crazy. And he's like, I'm not crazy, which means you're crazy.
Right.
Yeah, he became obsessed with using and learning, quote unquote, survival skills, which he was one of those assholes that used to bury food in the woods and thought that that was going to save him.
And so while legitimately he would bring people over the house, talk about his food deposits and the end of the world while flipping through nude pictures of the many prostitutes he paid to take nude pictures of, rough neighbor. Also, rough new boyfriend to bring around the parents.
Yeah. You don't show him to mom and dad for quite some time.
He's just not a cool guy.
No, absolutely not. He said, like, if you don't have survival skills and if you don't have a bunker, then you're not going to survive the impending nuclear holocaust.
But you know what else you can use a bunker for, dog meat?
Sex slave prison?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You could definitely take a bunker and turn into a prison for a sex slave, which is also exactly what he wanted. He felt that women should only be used for cleaning sex, and when you're done with them, you can put them away.
You know, it's funny. My parents used to always tell me that it doesn't matter what grades you got in school because you never know when Jesus is coming back.
Oh,
and then they found out Jesus wasn't coming back. They moved to Florida. That's what they did instead. But you get the feeling after the nuclear holocaust never occurred, which everyone was saying was going to occur. I mean, this was still lockdown drills in middle schools. They would hide under their desks because that would somehow not get you murdered. Mm-hmm. But I think once that didn't happen, maybe that was the reason he's like, step two in life.
No, he always thought up to the very end, he was waiting for the end to come. And what he would do to also prepare for that is that he was, as Marcus put here, he's very fatalistic.
Yeah.
He kept with him cyanide caplets that he would use on dogs in order to work the dosage out. He would sew cyanide caplets into his clothes just in case whenever the shit went down, he could fucking off himself.
Yeah.
And also, he would not shut up about to anybody that he met.
Right. Yeah, he would always say, I carry death in my pocket. And he also talked about how he had hollowed out one of his teeth and kept a little bit of cyanide in one of his teeth. So in case he had his clothes taken away from him, he could quickly just open up his tooth with his tongue and swallow the cyanide and die instantly.
Like an asshole.
Yeah, like he's working some sort of CIA mission.
What a pain in the ass. This is just a... Oh, God, I could just see this guy at an office, like the guy who fills the copiers and shit, and just like, oh, we've come by your desk and hounded you, and then every single time, like, any girl comes to talk to you and leaves, he's just like, that Wendy's a real piece of ass. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm like, shut up, fucking Lenny. Get away from me.
Now, while it would be years before Lake would find a suitable spot to carry out Operation Miranda, he would try for the first time on a 5,000-acre homestead called The Ranch, split in a 200 separate plots of land. A small community had sprung up composed of former San Franciscans looking to escape the failure of the Haight-Ashbury hippie life,
which is the very end of the hangover from the end of the hippie movement.
Yeah.
These were people that were trying to truly live off the grid. And again, we're going to see how these sort of altruist communities are immediately taken advantage of by a psychopath.
Yeah, they're trying to live off the grid in the most innocent way possible. They're trying to live without power lines, without telephones.
Nothing innocent about it. There really isn't. This is how Warren Jeffs controlled everybody in Utah. This is how cults start. This is how molestation goes unchecked. These people were all a bunch of deviants.
But the problem is that that's where it goes always. But at the very beginning, at least, the first 15 minutes of the idea.
I'll give give you 15.
It starts at it being like, we can go corn and use the corn both as food and as pretty bits of corn that you can hang up on strings for corn decorations.
Yeah, the first generation is always people with names like, and these people all did live at the ranch, people with names like Zephyr, Beaver, Otter, and Morning Glory.
And Morning Glory can make some of the best tree branch sandals you've ever seen. Yes, they are highly uncomfortable, and yes, they only last for 3 wears, but they are definitely, at one point, tree branch sandals.
Oh, isn't that nice?
And actually, Otter and Morning Glory, they were said to be the high priest and priestess in the ranch's quote-unquote black magic cult and owned quite the large snake.
But you know, it's just two people in black robes just waving at people driving by being like, welcome to the neighborhood. You guys want a goblet of blood? It's not blood, it's grape juice. We're just having fun over here. Come over and join the cult, all right, guys? Enjoy yourself. We got all the corn you could possibly stomach.
Yeah, that's the thing. You go out, you plant corn, and then you're like, what do you have to do? You just have to wait for it to grow. You got to fill the time with something.
Yeah, fuck it. Balling. Balling out in a dust cloud.
Playing with a large snake.
But there was one unsuspecting, far too trusting hippie with way too much faith in the goodness of people that Leonard Lake scammed. Her name was Venus.
Now, if you name your kid Venus.
Well, no, Venus was the name she gave to herself.
If you give yourself the name Venus.
Much, much worse.
You're basically, I'm not saying you're asking for it, but you're definitely going to be taken advantage of.
You're definitely going to be taken advantage of.
So
yeah.
I have a new nickname idea. Just think, but I can't give it to myself. You have to give it to me. Men are from Mars. Women are from...
Just go to grad school. Cheryl, I'm calling you Cheryl.
But women
Cheryl
are... I am a woman. Where am I from?
Venus.
That's my name. He called me Venus.
Go to grad school, Cheryl.
Okay.
I know I'm your father and you don't respect me, and I'm trying not to control you.
I would have heard you, but you didn't call me.
No,
my name.
Trying.
I don't know who Cheryl is. So.
I'm just desperate for you to not be murdered in a sex dungeon.
Well, Venus wouldn't be murdered in a sex dungeon.
Oh, that's good.
No. But Leonard Lake, she would get into a relationship with him, which was no picnic either. For months, he would just constantly pressure her to take nude photographs, would go on and on about his survival skills, started just casually talking about killing his younger brother. But even creepier were his frequent mentions of Operation Miranda and the bunker he needed to build to pull it all off. And Venus, for some reason, thought that Leonard was building a shelter for people to escape the cities. Like, that's what she thought Operation Miranda was.
Well, it's because the way he talked about it, the vague way, he'd be like, it's a place to escape to. It's a place where only pleasure is known. He's just like, it's going to be the new Valhalla. That sounds amazing. But he's just like, there's going to be ropes there and a lot of pussy damage. And he's just like, well, I'll just hear the first bit.
Exactly. Well, she thought it was like a reverse Harriet Tubman making a bizarre underground railroad, but like out of the cities into some rural ass place.
Yeah. The problem with that railroad is just went straight to Ball City.
Yeah. He wasn't tunneling or anything, though, was he?
He was. Yeah.
He was tunneling.
Yeah,
okay.
He absolutely was. Now, what he would do, much to the chagrin of all of the hippies around, is he rented a backhoe and brought it out to the ranch. This
sort of digging big old holes.
Huge, just gouging out the sides of these beautiful slopes. But the hippies, of course, didn't do anything about it.
It was free living out there.
Yeah.
It was free living. You can't tell him he can't get a backhoe and ruin the nature, because technically that's his freedom.
Yeah, technically. Mm. But actually the rest of the community, they admitted that the more he talked about Operation Miranda and the more he started actually digging out a hole to build it, the more he, quote-unquote, freaked us out.
Yeah.
Yes. And Venus's breaking point came when Leonard pushed her off a ladder. And so she sold Leonard the property and lit out.
Because it wasn't his house.
No.
He came into the community, was kind of bumming around, had seduced Venus, and Venus invited him into her house. And then she sold it to him. And in a weird sort of hippie way, like just being like, all right, well, you're just going to do your own thing. And so she sold the house to him. Meanwhile, he's also romancing a 16-year-old
that
became obsessed with him. Like, this 16-year-old that he's showing pictures, all these nude pictures of women he used to be with, and this is the common example of, like, if you're underage and a 30-year-old is flirting with you and you think he's cool, any 30-year-old who's flirting with a 16-year-old is a monster.
That's right. So at this point, he's in the psychopathy of Macaulay Culkin from the movie The Good Son. That's where he's at. He's pushing people off of ladders.
Oh, yeah.
He's going a little bit crazy. Everyone's concerned about his presence.
He's Ed Gein killing his brother crazy right now. Because at this time, he's also bragging about the fact that he had killed his own brother.
Well, he hadn't killed his brother at this point.
But he's talking about it.
Yeah, he's talking about it. He's talking about killing his own brother very flippantly. Like, it's one of the... It's like... And he talks about everything very casually, except when he starts talking about... The cyanide cat. Well, he talks about everything very casually until he gets to the underground bunker. Then he gets very serious. But everything else is like, you know, I got cyanide capsules on me at all times. Always ready.
Just to be super impressive.
Yeah, to be like super cool.
And also he would invite his super fat friend Charles Gunner over that he would then mercilessly make fun of in front of the people that he was introducing him to.
Yeah, Charles Gunner, 5'8", 400 pounds.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Leonard just called him Fat Charles.
That makes sense, though.
It does make a lot of sense. Yeah. But every time Fat Charles visited, Leonard would make him go on these really long hikes up the steepest slopes that he could find, deliberately going a lot faster than Gunner could handle.
It's no different than the trainers on Biggest Loser.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Kind of a Jillian Michaels type over here.
Yeah, and although it seemed like Lake kept Gunner around just to torture him, we'll find out in the next episode the practical purpose that Leonard Lake found for Fat Charles, but you'll just have to wait to hear about Operation Fish.
Oh my God, I can't wait for Operation Fish. This is exciting. What was it, Operation Dookie Pants?
Brownie Pockets.
My goodness, so many operations.
Now, the ranch's overall reaction to Leonard's personality was mixed, to say the least. But he did manage to make one friend.
With the black magic priest next door, Otter. Oh. So after hanging out a couple times, Otter told Leonard that through his occult studies of rare magical creatures, he thinked he had rediscovered a lost process for creating a unicorn.
Mm-hmm. It's like an extra stupid Animal House.
Yes.
Isn't that funny?
Everybody's doing dumb shit on this ranch.
Oh, yeah. I see. And then Gunner's the Belushi. It's all working out.
Yeah. So, yeah, Otter told him that he had rediscovered, and Otter was 100% serious when he told them, it's like, yes, through my black magic studies, I have rediscovered a long-forgotten process for creating a unicorn.
The only thing one has to do to create a unicorn, the magical beast of lore and figmentarian, was to perform a simple surgical procedure on the first hours of a goat's birth, which would then cause just one solitary horn to grow from the animal's forehead, and then it's a unicorn. Can't you see?
So it's the theory of, like, cut off one of the dog's legs and the other like kind of slowly moves to the middle. Is that what it's saying?
You can snap an animal's bones into any shape you like.
You can?
You can. Huh. Sometimes they die, but that's just the magic overtaking them over to Neverland.
But you would just say it's a one-horned goat, not a unicorn.
Unicorn!
Okay, unicorn. All right.
Otter had only been able to pull this off successfully once, and so he named his unicorn Goat Sir Lancelot.
Oh my God.
And as soon as Leonard caught a glimpse of the animal, he, in the words of Die For Me author Don Lasseter, quote,
could see unlimited potential for the seductive use of Sir Lancelot.
What a nice bunch of hippies they were.
And by the way, Die For Me by Don Lasseter, yeah, I'm using this book for information, raw facts, but God damn, is it bad.
It's just a lot of side stories.
It's a lot of side stories. I don't need to know the backstory of a guy that once told Leonard Lake about a place that was hiring. That is in the book. This author spends two pages on the backstory of a guy that just pointed at a building and told Leonard Lake they're hiring over there.
No, watch the documentary Journey into Evil. That is very informative. And also one that I'm reading right now, I believe, is called Into the Blood. I'll put it up on the Facebook page. It's good. It's an hour and 40 minutes long.
Ooh, wonderful.
You have developed a history of reading authors' books and then taking all the information out of it and then just throwing him under the bus.
No, I don't. What are you talking
him under
about?
The bus. It's a good book, this guy.
I haven't read anything.
I read the cover of it. Die for it. He's got pictures on it. I love the picture. I mean, at the very least, I want to say this guy crushed the pictures up.
But I will say the one thing that he crushed it on is this little story that I really like, because Sir Lancelot, the unicorn goat, would be used to make Leonard Lake's ultimate seduction come true at the Renaissance Fair.
Oh, my God.
Oh, the Renaissance Fair is a very important part of the Leonard Lake story. Of course, his proposition to Otter, very simple.
Hey, buddy. Hey, listen. This goat, loving it. All right? Love you. Made a unicorn. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this goat. I'm going to go to the Renaissance Fair. I'm going to charge money for photos with the goat. And I'm going to return with profits, right, from the pictures. I'm going to split it with you, Black Priest Otter. Meanwhile, Black Priest Otter is just being like, that's against the tenets of black magic to accept money for just... It's a sacred animal. But guess what? It fucking worked.
It worked.
Many times.
So yeah. Many times. It worked enough where he kept this scam going on and off for an entire year until the magical summer of 1980.
I'm
going
to put it this way, guys. Remember, all right? I've heard people out there lamenting being single. But
of
listen,
course.
Sometimes
we just had a thread about it.
But sometimes you just got to do what you love and then... Love will find you.
That's
because
right.
Because you're keeping your mind on what's important. So sometimes you got to take a goat that is mutilated to look like a unicorn out to a fair for up to a year, because you know what that can find you? The perfect mate.
Yes.
Because someone who is in love with you and someone who's in love with a goat, a unicorn that is obviously a goat,
yeah,
that has been tortured to look like a unicorn, is going to love you and all of your dog shit about underground bunkers and cyanide pills, and it's going to be in the form of a woman named Clara Lynn Cricket Blast.
That's right. It's sort of the personification of, if you don't love me at my worst, you won't love me at my best.
Yeah. So she loved this goat.
Yeah.
And not only she loved the goat and unicorn, but like the cut of Leonard Lake's jib immediately, they started like, there's an exchange where she's just like, nice goat. He's like, it's a unicorn. She's like, well, something here's got a long horn. And he's just like, wink, yeah, wink, wink, and boom, they were in love.
Yeah, wow. They just immediately, this like weird sensual banter back and forth. She immediately moved in with them. And soon after, Cricket, who she'll be known from here on out as, soon after she came into his life, so too did Charles Ng, which we'll get into in disgusting detail on part two.
All right, so you would say this is the most lighthearted of the episodes that we'll be discussing here.
Because the rest of it's pretty bleak.
All right.
Very bleak. It gets extremely bleak. We're going to get into some of the journals.
But don't worry, we'll make it fun. We'll make it fun for you. Don't even think about it.
Don't think about it. Henry?
You see, you're thinking about it. You see how you're thinking about it?
Yeah.
Don't think about it.
Don't think about it. All right, that's episode one.
Yeah.
Mr. Lake and Charlie. I can't wait to get in and learn a lot more about Mr. Charlie here.
Yeah, because, you know, it can maybe help you find a girlfriend, you know?
Yeah. I don't need a lot of help with that, I'll tell you. All right.
Oh,
my God, I'm getting proposed to.
Gossip.
Wow.
I'm still celibate. That is by my choice, though. And that's not one of those cheesy comedian jokes. All right. So.
Cryptic.
What's that?
Cryptic.
All right.
We have some shout outs here.
Ooh. Yes, we absolutely have some shout outs. I want to get a shout out to Gary Schmidt. Happy 40th birthday, buddy.
Ooh, yeah. I got the same shout out, buddy. Hail Satan. It's your birthday. Don't make a bunker where you keep women as slaves.
No, he seems to be very happily married.
That's great. I'm just saying both of you. Because sometimes husbands and wives do it together. You just don't do it. Also, I want to say happy birthday to Carly from your boyfriend, Simon Miller. I hope you guys are still together.
Are we just doing like a Good Morning America thing now?
Sometimes,
where we're like, and happy 100th birthday to Gloria in South Dakota.
Sometimes it's nice.
Yeah,
I don't
sometimes
know.
Okay. Sometimes it's nice to be nice to the people, Ben.
No, I mean, I'm very happy. I'm happy birthday. That's great.
Ben Sarah.
No, it's I think it's wonderful. You had a birthday.
Yeah, and if you guys want a Last Podcast on the Left t-shirt for Christmas time, go to Cave Comedy Radio go to cavecomedyradio.com/merch. The last day we're going to be sending out t-shirts for Christmas. The very last day is December 20th. 1st, so get in your orders before December 20th if you want to get a t-shirt for your special somebody, and even then, it might not be guaranteed, so be sure to order your t-shirt as soon as humanly possible.
Do it now!
Yeah, because we're going to be getting a lot of orders in the next couple of months. You want to be sure to get your t-shirt for your sweetheart.
Wonderful. All right, find Marcus Parks on Twitter at Marcus Parks. You can find Henry on Twitter at Henry Loves You. I'm at Ben Kissel. And let's see, thanks for supporting all the shows here on CCR, Top Hat, Roundtable, Page 7, Sex and Other Human Activities, and all the other programs.
Hail Satan.
Hi,
just enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
Find joy in this holiday, even if it's going around wrecking people's fucking Christmas decorations on the street.
If you find joy in ruining Christmas.
Don't do that. Don't do that. And if you would like a more positive view on Christmas, please listen to this week's episode of Sex and Other Human Activities.
Chaos Reign.
Very nice. And when you see a goat, it's just a two-horned unicorn. Oh, hail yourselves.
Hail me. Hail me.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.